Sahana Vavatu, Sahanao Bhunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidvishavahai, Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Page 6. The BBT purport mentions Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Chakur discusses this verse as follows. One may object that at this point Lord Krishna had not actually passed the Kishore age. 8 to 10 to 15, since the woman in Mathura had stated, Kva Chati Sukumarangao Kishorao Napta Yovanao. Krishna Balaram had very tender limbs, being still at the Kishore age, not having reached adolescence. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:44-8. The definition of the different stages of growing up is given as follows. Kaumaram, Paschamab, Dantam, Paugantam, Dasamavadhi, Kaishoram, A, Paschad, Dashad, Yovanam, Tu, Tata, Param. The Kumara age lasts until the age of 5, Pauganda up to the age of 10, and Kaishora to the age of 15. From then on, one is known as Yovana. According to this statement, the Kishore period ends at the age of 15. Krishna was only 11 years old when he killed Kamsa, according to Uddhava's words. Ekadasa samastatra gudarchi sa balo vasat. Like a covered flame, Lord Krishna remained there incognito with Balaram for 11 years. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:2-26. Right, there means Vrindavan. And since Krishna and Balaram never took Brahminical initiation at Brajabhumi, it was at the time of their going to Mathura that the Kishore age stage began rather than ended. Right? Because for Kshatriyas then to take Upanayanam at 11, you know, as the later stage, then that's considered proper. Right? Because they were living in Vrindavan as Vaishyas, so at 12 is all right, but they came and as Kshatriyas, then they take it 11. So now they're in Mathura, so now they're Kshatriyas. Right? You know, that's the fun part. That was Shishupal's complaint. You know, what's his varna? He doesn't have a varna. You know, and the Acharyas point out that it was a praise because he's above varna. He's beyond. This objection to Lord Krishna's statement in the present verse that his parents could not enjoy his Kishore age is based on ordinary measurement of age. Yet we consider the following statement from the Bhagavatam 10:8:26. Kalena, Kalenal Pena Rajarshe, Rama Krishnas Chagovraje, Agrishta Janobhi Padir, Vichakra Matur Ash Jasa. O King Parikit, within a short time, Rama and Krishna began to walk very easily in Gokul on their legs, by their own strength, without the need to crawl. Sometimes we see that the son of a king, even while in the Pauganda stage of life, undergoes exceptional physical growth and exhibits activity appropriate to a Kishore. Then what to speak of Lord Krishna, whose exceptional growth is established in the Vaishnava Toshini, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and other works. The 3 years and 4 months that Krishna stayed in Mahavan were the equivalent of 5 years for an ordinary child, and thus in that period he completed his Kumara stage of eight stage of childhood. The period then from the age of 6 to 8 months from then to the age of 6 years, 8 months, during which he lived in Vrindavan, constitutes his Pauganda age. And the period from 6 years, 8 months through his 10th year, during which he lived in Nandishwara, Nandagaon, constitutes his Kaishora age. Then at the age of 10 years, 7 months, on the 11th lunar day of the dark fortnight of Chaitra, he went to Mathura. 11th. And on the 14th day thereafter, he killed Kamsa. Thus he completed his Kaishora age at age 10. And he eternally remains at that age. In other words, we should understand that from this point on, the Lord forever remains a Kaishora. Thus Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur analyzes the intricacies of this verse. Right, so the Mahapurusha, then there, how they function is at 1.5 times the age of whatever they are. Right? Does that make sense? So then we say 10 years, 8 months, and if we double that, then you get 16. I mean, we take that half again, you get 16. That's why then they said the Kaishora age they weren't able to experience. Because when he went to Mathura, then he was acting in the Yauvana age. Right? Because for Krishna, being eternal, then it's more about what mood he wants to manifest. It's not a matter of he's at a particular age. Does this make some sense? Yeah. So in that way, even though it would say, no, technically he's now Kaishora, but no, that mood of Kaishora, he's already finished in Vrindavan. And now he's living at the Yauvana age. Does that make sense? Okay. But we also see is that this aspect of Kaishora, that the attractiveness of it and everything, that's what he manifests. So technically, according to the things, he is acting as a yovana. So you have all these multiple things happening at once. And at the same time, is now he can take Upanayanam at age 11, you know, because he's a kshatriya. So you get the benefit of all those. That, so Krishna does many things with one action. Lord Krishna continued, deprived by fate, we cannot live with you and enjoy the pampered happiness most children enjoy in their parents' home. With one body, one can acquire all goals of life. With one's body, one can acquire all goals of life. And it is one's parents who give the body birth and its sustenance. Therefore, no mortal man can repay his debt to his parents, even if he serves them for a full lifetime of 100 years. A son who, though able to do so, fails to provide for his parents with his physical resources and wealth is forced after his death to eat his own flesh. A man who, though able to do so, fails to support his elderly parents, chaste wife, young child or spiritual master, or who neglects a brahmana or anyone who comes to him for shelter is considered dead though breathing. Thus we have wasted all these days, unable, as we were, to properly honor you, because our minds were always disturbed by fear of Kamsa. Footnote 1. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, therefore, because we were unable to serve you for fear of Kamsa, Kamsat udvigna chetaso, our days have passed uselessly, we are at fault. Right, because otherwise, if he hadn't extended his yoga maya, how would they be able to appreciate this? Because otherwise, he was in the mood of God, it's whatever he wants to do, that's fine with them. Right? Because that was their mood before this. So then Krishna extended his yoga maya again, then he was able to speak all these nice things. Dear father and mother, please forgive us for not serving you. But the real meaning is, we spent all these days uselessly, our mind wanting to go to Mathura, because we heard about Kamsa and wanted to fight with him. Udvigna chetasoho, but we were unable to go. In this case, udvigna means moving or going. When Krishna says he spent his days uselessly, it is an expression of regret. Right? So he's feeling that, you know, that they wanted to go, they couldn't go because of that fear of Kamsa. And so then in that way, if we're taking care of the parents there. But we know of the two pastimes, that the pastimes in Vrindavan being so much more attractive than Krishna actually, when Akura came, did not want to go. But because he has these duties, he said that this is what he'll do. He'll protect the pious, he'll destroy the impious. Therefore, he's coming to Mathura to take care of that aspect. Yes.
In this scenario, Krishna seems to be very clever, because he says to different people different things.
Yes.
Specifically what they want to hear from them.
Yes.
Is that okay?
It's okay for him to do. When we try to be God, then it doesn't always work out so good.
Because people get upset like that.
Yes, because who's it about?
About the person.
Yes, but when Krishna's saying it, who's it about?
About them.
Yeah, so then why would you get upset? Because he's saying what they want to hear sincerely, because that's how he wants to interact. So that's the thing, is he can interact with all these different personalities in the way that they want to be interacted with and be able to do that. Well, for ourselves, because we make it about ourselves, we can't do that. We're in one mood, then everything has to function in that mood. Everybody else has to adjust. But for here, Krishna, for each devotee, he adjusts and deals with them according to their way that they're attracted to him. See, how they see him is how he responds. So one could say is, no, but he's dealing with everybody differently. But the point is they all see him differently also. So he's interacting with them as they see him.
That means they just focus on their own relationship, and whatever happens, there, then they don't care, basically.
It's not they don't care. It's not that aspect. The focus is on they just have a particular attraction to Krishna. And so then Krishna interacts with them based on that. And so then those interactions that match together, or he matches the various relationships and the interactions together according to the situation. So how he does that, that becomes religious principles, right? Because when we serve Krishna by engaging religion in his service. But if we think the religion on its own is important, that's a waste of time. Its only purpose is because it pleases Krishna. Why does it please Krishna? Because this is how Krishna, as the taster of rasa, knows how to balance the rasas purposely. You know what I'm saying? Let us say I'm making a chutney. How much salt do I put? Right? Standard amount, right? Full amount. What if I'm making a lemon juice and making it salty? How much salt do I put? Just a pinch. I wouldn't put the, So in other words, just a pinch of salt in the lemon juice then brings out that flavor. If I put the regular amount, it's too much. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But let's say I'm cooking something like, I've fried a bunch of potatoes, and I'm putting salt. How much salt do I put? Right? Even more, extra. You can handle more salt there because of the fried, then the more salt. You understand? Because the salt's a catalyst for digestion. So something fried is harder to digest, so more salt helps digest it. Does that make sense? Yeah, so you have all these things that it matches. Does that make sense? So like that, then you have to adjust things. So Krishna, when he's dealing with all these different rasas together, then the balance of them, what's it manifest where, what becomes prominent and all that, that is the way to balance rasa. Then the actual interaction with Krishna is proper, right? Because imbalance is rasa bas, so that's not recommended. It's not pleasing to Krishna. So the balance is there. So that forms that Krishna uses to balance all the rasas, that's called dharma. Because that's the external form he uses. So we're given the external form. We're given the knowledge and the actions that they perform in the spiritual world. But the difference is we don't have the affection that's there of the residents of the spiritual world. But at least we get to use the form. Right? So this idea that, no, I'm conditioned in this way, I should work in my own way, then that's not actually a very progressive way of thinking. It's not actually understanding what opportunity is given. It's like someone gives you a pure silver glass to drink out of. And no, I'd rather drink out of the, you know, plastic cup that I've always drank out of. You know. It's just not understanding what we're being given. So religion is given in that it is the perfect form to use in Krishna's service. Right? So that's the standard way of mixing. But we see from this last time that sometimes when the mix is extraordinary, sometimes then those rules don't apply like that. There's some alternative element to it, but only because it's extraordinary. In a standard sense, it wouldn't be. Like here, it's not that he's going around killing uncles all the time, right? You know, that's the standard thing. Oh, now we can kill our uncles, right? You know, there's no dog. It's because of the extraordinary, no one else could kill Kamsa. He was too powerful. So the only one to kill him would be him. Does that make sense? But then because the other ones don't need to be killed by him, they're not so strong. Right? Then Balaram can kill him, and then it'll fit better into the rasa, because then Devaki doesn't lose all of her brothers by Krishna, but by Balaram. You know, so it's just a different flavor. You understand? So Krishna's expert, that's why he is rasa, so he knows how to do all this very perfectly. So then the recommendations in the scriptures and how people act, that is given by Krishna as the religious way to act. But it's not about religion, it's about the primary, which is love for Krishna. Expressing that attraction and love for Krishna. Then you use the religious forms as the best possible forms to use. Right? But it's not about the forms. It's about those forms are useful because of their application in rasa. Does that make sense? So parakiya rasa, for it to go on, can it be known? No, it has to be secret. So therefore, can Krishna and the gopis in public interact? No. So that's the rule. That's the religious rule. Right? Does that make sense? And as we see is that the conjugal rasa, because of its intensity, does it include everybody else in it? No. Therefore, that's why then it is private. And hence, in the modern context, they say, get a room. Because no one wants to see, because it doesn't include anyone else. Right? But parental rasa, then let's say the parent is dealing with the child very nicely, and all that everybody else can appreciate. Right? Our friends are playing and all that, as long as they're not too rambunctious. They're considering the environment. So therefore, if they're in an environment where there has to be respect for seniors and all that, and they respect that, then everybody appreciates that extra, you know, energy that's being there and happiness and smiling and joking. But if they're rambunctious, that is inappropriate because they're not respecting who's there, then that will be a problem. Therefore, then, that element of respect. Well, if they're out on their own, out in the forest, they yell and scream, run around, jump out of the trees, throw everything around, it's fun. You expect that. You know, it's not that they go out into the forest and get out a chess board or something. You know what I'm saying? No, they play chess in the city, you know, where you can't run around. Does that make sense? So all the rules that are there, and that we don't understand them because we don't understand rasa. It's that simple. So when devotees then say, or, oh, why do we have to follow all these rules? That's a person who doesn't understand rasa. It's that straightforward. Or it's may understand, but they don't know the context of this other rule. And when it's explained, they catch it. I can remember one senior devotee was asking me, you know, why are you doing this? And I said, it produces this. And they said, oh, like that devotee. Okay. And that was it. They were good. Right? But others, that's a 3-hour discussion. And then it's kind of like, okay, yeah, it's okay. You guys do that. You know, cause you guys, you know, you do that stuff. We don't do that stuff, but you guys, it's okay. Because they understood rasa, but not in that context. But then there's others that then they come and they see and they understand immediately. Because they know how that applies. Does that make sense? So the religious rules are simply to ensure that rasa goes on nicely. And if someone has no idea, then you keep it simple, because they're also not extending much in rasa. But as they become sophisticated, the natural thing is to add in things. So you can't be so sophisticated that you can use political correctness and not the Vedic culture. That's a total misunderstanding. If you're so simple, it's just Prabhupada said we do this, and that's all you do, and you only consider things that Prabhupada said, and therefore all the technicalities of Varnashram you don't understand, because when Prabhupada was here, we didn't do all that. Though he mentions it in the book, but you go by your experience when Prabhupada was here, you were interacting with Prabhupada directly, and how you do, and then you just do those things. It will work, because you're only keeping it simple, you're applying it simple, and that's it. Then it works, because you're keeping it. But if you personally are more sophisticated, and then you try to keep the Krishna consciousness, you know, just super, super simple, but your own personal life is sophisticated, then the problem is that material sophistication that you will have to apply, because you're not using the Vedic, then will bleed over into the other. And therefore, the simple things that Prabhupada gave, then you'll start to doubt, because one doesn't know rasa. So since the whole point is getting to pure love of Krishna, which is prema, which is about rasa, then the whole actual subject matter is rasa. But because we don't understand that, we think we're Krishna and everything's for us to enjoy. Therefore, we have to establish the authority of the scriptures, the authority of Krishna, how he's the source of all energies, and then he's the one that has rasa. He is rasa. Right? Then understanding the nature of the jivas, then how all this fits together is the chinta beta beta tattva, then your process, then the results. So we have to, you know, understand all these, then we start to get an idea. But the whole point that you're trying to get to is to be able to interact with Krishna based on that. So that's why all the etiquette, all the different things of the Vedic culture are simply to ensure that proper rasa goes on. Because that's if interaction is good, we consider that good. We get a taste. You know, so in the contemporary environment, that everyone follows the etiquette of a meeting, and the meeting goes in that way well, they get a taste is gained. So one will consider that's a success. Even though technically for others, they consider a meeting would produce results that are actually applied, and you see a transformation of the material energy to a more productive environment. But at least the people in the meeting, because it went according to rasa, they're satisfied. Right? But as leaders, then others aren't satisfied because nothing happens. Does that make sense? Because it's against that rasa. So it has to be you follow the etiquette and the meeting, and it's applied, and people, and things get done. So you have to consider all of that. Then that's why the Vedic culture do. So it will be, yes, you have to follow etiquette. But at the same time, is the whole purpose of following etiquette is to come to a form of action that will produce benefit for you know, whoever is involved, whoever is considered the citizenry. Does that make sense? So it's all about rasa. You know, so that's why, you know, the boys are there, they're having fun, and all the adults are getting annoyed, and what's the big deal? Why are you always, you know, disturbing? Because they're not, the rasa between themselves is going well, but they're not considering it in connection with others. So as soon as there's others involved, there's religious rules. So these are technically rules of rasa. Right? But we don't identify them as that, because that's just the forms used. So the actual emotional responses to the application of these and the situations, that will define as the science of rasa. But we see the nectar of devotion, it gives all the activities that one should do and how one should behave in the first section. But then the next three sections, you know, which is three quarters of the book, then it talks about rasa. Yes, because we're still not adjusted to rasa. And so then after 2 years, then we'll be start that one. You know? So that's the whole idea. So the idea is by the time we finish 12 years, then it will start to, oh, that's what it is. Okay. And then we have the rest of our life to apply it. But the point is if we understand what we're dealing with, then it makes it so much easier. So Krishna, being the Lord of Rasa, he knows perfectly how to deal with each devotee. So we see as how he'll deal with each one is perfectly according to the religion or the nature of that relationship. Because religion means understanding and dealing with the inherent nature of the situation. The elements in the situation. So here it is that the situation is that they've come to Mathura after, you know, such a long time. And they're dealing with their parents who've gone through so much difficulty. So considering the difficulty they've gone through, considering the separation, now the opportunity that they can then interact, then all that will be spoken like that. Now if they're always there and they happen to have, you know, been living in Mathura all this time, but they went for a weekend to Braj and then came back for the Dhanur Yajna, then this all wouldn't have to be said. Because the nature would be different. Therefore, the religious elements are different. So that's what religion is dealing with the inherent nature of something. We think it's just, no, dealing mechanically with something to get the effect I want, which is for myself. So it's about the rasa that I perceive I should get. But that's why then things are considered pious or impious. Because if we mentally speculate on what is actual rasa, and we're wrong, that's impious. Right? If we happen to mentally speculate and we're right, then that's good fortune. But the nature of speculation is never steady. So it will change. You will go wrong because of, you know, our friends. Right? Lust, anger, greed, and, you know, envy, attachment, illusion, and madness. So, we'll always, means our friends always know how to lead us down the wrong path. You know? So then, therefore the recommendations you follow Shastra, and what Shastra says, then at least externally you're doing what's right. And because everybody's worried about externals, then generally everybody's happy by it. But they'll never be fully satisfied because it doesn't have the internal, which is pure love for Krishna. We'll say, no, he has to be sincere and this and that. And that will, okay, on the subtle platform, make us satisfied. But not on the platform of consciousness. So even if everything is gross and subtle, is all perfect, it still won't satisfy the soul. Because the only way the soul can be satisfied is rasa is with Krishna. You see everything in connection with Krishna. Like I go to a rich man's house and I see everything in the house in connection with the rich man, then my dealing in the house goes very nicely. Right? But if I don't see it in connection with him, then I'll deal in proper ways. So one may say, "Is no, but if it's all about Krishna, what about the other people? You know, we want relationships and all that." It's a matter, do I see everyone connected with how they relate to me? So if I like you, then we have a good relationship. I don't like you, I don't have a good relationship. Well, if it's connected to Krishna, is everybody's connected to Krishna, so how they're dealing with Krishna and how they deal with you, that's how you respond. So then you actually have a basis. That's actually sincere. Right? So, in other words, it's just that there is this aspect where we're dealing with something beyond what we've dealt with since time immemorial. The concept that there's someone else is the center of attention. That the actual primary consideration for all secondary considerations is Krishna, not ourselves. So that then actually defines rasa, because as we try to do it, it never works because everybody's trying to be the center. And so rasa can't actually work very well. So it's only when Krishna is the center, then the rasa can actually function properly. So that's why then we follow the Vedic culture, because it defines how rasa works, and all this militating against it is just, it's just foolishness. It's childishness, actually. Right? Because foolishness, then you might attribute to an adult. but then they have maturity in some area. But childishness just means they have no clue at all. So it's just how they feel is what they do. And that's the modern concept, how I feel we do. But you're a group of kids, you have to work together as kids. But how we as kids function, then that's the standard. How other kids function, that's less than us. So whoever happens to be having more influence, then that's they set the rules. But it still is not about how to accommodate everybody. Only the Vedic culture can accommodate everyone. Like that. So that's how it works. You know, but it's a balance. You know, we don't want to follow the rules. That's fine. The Vedic culture can accommodate those who don't follow rules. But the point is they don't get the social status of those who do. So it's Rasa Bas in the modern context where I don't want to follow the rules, but I want all the status of someone who's following. Right? I won't follow any of the Vedic stuff and all that, but I want to be counted as an advanced devotee. You can't do that. That's like, I go in the kitchen, I don't know what I'm doing and all that, and whatever I cook comes out terrible and disgusting, but I want the respect and the prestige of having cooked, you know, like a 3-star chef. You know, it just doesn't work. It's total Rasa Bas. So that's the difficulty. That's the difficulty, is that we're mixing. The Vedic culture will do. The tribals, they live out in the forest, they eat what they want, they do what they want, as long as they don't bother those who do follow the rules, then they're cool. But you stay outside. Therefore, you can do. You can't come inside. You can't say, no, it's my right of speech, you know, that I can say whatever nonsense I want and then, you know, and all that, and that's my right. But the point is your right can't infringe on others' rights. That's what Rasa is about, how to balance all that. So the Varnashram gives that form in which it can be done. In this way, it's useful in devotional service. It's not devotional service. That's why we don't define Varnashram as devotional service. You know, Rupa Goswami mentions that in Nectar Devotion. When we're talking about Dasyam, we don't say that that's Varnashram. Right? Other Vaishnavas may, because for them, the form that they use is a major element. In Vaikuntha, the religious form that's used is a major aspect of the taste of Aishwarya. So for them, it's very much part of it, you know, and they're not having to make that fine distinction, so it works. But for the Gaudiyas, then we can't say that, because it's about that flavor of service to Krishna without the Aishwarya. Therefore, it becomes the natural medium to use, but we don't call it that it's devotional service. It's used. Right? In other words, a mother Yashoda cooks for Krishna because of her attraction. But the rule that a mother has to cook for, you know, the family, that's not why she's doing it. That's why we don't call it devotional service. So she does it naturally. We have to do it because of the rules, because we don't know. Right? Because if people knew, then why is it today cooking is one of the, you know, lost, you know, arts? Does that make sense? You know, because people are busy with their career and getting ahead and prestige and all that, that, you know, foolish sentimental things like, you know, doing things in interaction and consideration of the family is just not important, because social status is so much more important than family. Isn't it? Right? That's how all communities of the world have progressed. Right? Because it's all about social status. No. The ones that know family and community is more important, they still have family and community. And those who went for career and prestige, they have no community. It's that simple. So we see is that in actuality, it's really straightforward, all these things. But you need to have a lot of background. Means this point we can discuss at this point in the Bhagavatam. Bringing this up earlier in the Bhagavatam, it wouldn't have had any real meaning. Means before, we just say you throw one pebble into the pond and you get all these concentric rings, everything works nicely. But that's what Varnashram describes, how to keep all the rings working. But then we'll say, oh, that's just mechanics, but I see a more practical thing to do here, so therefore I'm doing this. But when it comes to Rasa, no one can see it's more practical. Because it doesn't get the result. You can say, no, externally I got the result. Right? I managed it. I got the result. The festival happened. Everything went like clockwork. It was perfect. Now that all the devotees are really annoyed and really just don't want to come to festivals anymore and that, well, that's their problem. They're not sincere. I did a perfect job. So on the previous thing, how do you argue that? Because they'll go, the rings are perfect. You know, that person's supposed to be here at this ring, that one at this ring, this one at this ring. What they're mistaking there is that they're at the center, right? There's Krishna and them, and then everybody else around them, right? But when you bring up rasa, then you can see is that, yes, mechanically they use their organizational skills and abilities so nicely, but because they didn't consider the personal element of dealing with devotees, you know, because they would consider that as an obstacle. It's inefficient. Therefore, then in the name of efficiency, they went ahead and then they did everything nicely. But they destroyed so many relationships. So the Vedas is to avoid that. So yes, it's more work. Just like in first grade, how much work is there in math? Right? And then you get into 12th grade, how much work is there? And to say, oh, well, that's not important and all that. Yes, you can say that as long as you accept you're a first grader. Don't try to say that you're a college graduate and you can't even deal with beyond first grade. Therein lies the rub. Is that Hamlet? Yeah. So that's the problem. Is that they want the highest prestige, but acting like children. And why do we say children? Oh, why you're being so rough? And that's what the Bhagavatam calls. Anybody who doesn't see the spiritual as the center, even though they're very expert materially, they're called children. That's just the standard. Because in the Vedic culture, maturity means understanding the relationship between matter and spirit. But if we're just expert at matter, even though, yes, within the realm of matter, you may be very mature and very senior, but within the realm of human life, which is matter and spirit, then we're actually a child. So that's why then we follow in the footsteps of the acharyas. Like, I think one song, I can never remember who it is by, they're saying that they're just running after the spiritual master, Bhaktivinoda Guru, you know, saying Krishna, Krishna, like that. So that's the point. We just see ourselves as someone following this spiritual master. Then that all everything stays in balance. Is this? Yes.
So what is our hope? Is even the Pratibha rasa is undeveloped? Can we jump right into?
The point is that Pratibha is undeveloped in the way of Pratibha centered around ourselves. So if we look at it, none of the rasas are actually developed when it comes to Krishna.
Yeah.
Right? So therefore, and since the soul's nature is in relation to Krishna, therefore, in that way, we can jump. Because it's actually, we're not, you know, it's just like, you know, we're out laying in the ditch in the mud, like that. You know, can we actually just get up and go into the house and take a shower? Right? Because that's the natural position. So that's why it doesn't matter what our material ability is, our position, our knowledge, our success. It's that anybody can take up Krishna consciousness. And so when we think that my spiritual development is because I'm so materially advanced, then one's missed the point again. You know, one's missed the point because it has nothing to do with that. Now, if someone by having not and doing devotional service develops a sophistication in relationship to that, then yes, that's a symptom of their advancement because they're how things go in Krishna consciousness are improving. Does that make sense? But to think that automatically my secondary ability is the symptomatic of the primary. No, that's not there. It's how well you can use it in Krishna service that defines. Is that okay? Yeah.
So, when you don't come from a very cultured or proper background, or perhaps your parents didn't give you that affection as a child, then you have this inner difficulty with, you know, not always attracting energy towards yourself and acting in the proper way that you're explaining culturally and socially. So then you might take shelter of the instructions of the acharyas, like, you know, it says in Bhakti Samhita Sindhu that one should not be negligent in ordinary dealings.
Yeah.
Bhakti Nathaka will talk in Chaitanya Shikshamrita about how a grihastha lives his life, you know, in terms of... And also we're always told show compassion to all living entities.
Right.
And the way I looked at it was, so this is our replacement for not having grown up in a proper cultured society where we understand the finer dealings of human interaction. If we simply apply these instructions by the acharyas in terms of human dealings, then we will be following the rules of varnashram, though we may not know all of them properly.
Yeah.
But we have somehow, we're applying them because we're following these instructions, even though we didn't grow up in the proper cultural, psychological context. What would you say to that?
Yeah. Because the point is that if we grow up in an improper culture, and we, even within that things don't go properly, it doesn't have any actual need that there's a making of that culture proper. You just deal in the appropriate culture.
Right.
You know, just like, let's say, the sun somehow or another is, you know, whatever it is, our typical stories and that, you know, the young boy gets separated from the family and this and that, and the family is all very well-to-do and very proper and that. He ends up out on the street, and so then maybe his dealings on the street are going very well. He's successful out on the street, or maybe he's not. So it's not going well on the street, and he's feeling bad about that and feeling insecure, whatever it is that's the effect of that. But does that mean that do we have to perfect street life to move back into his house? No, he just moves back into his house, follows the culture that's there. That's the beauty of it, is that if we want to perfect our material culture, one, who has the karma for it? Right? And even if you, because you're not going to have it because of your previous karma, you're going to have what you have. Now, devotional service can give you that karma, but you have to perform devotional service to get it. And devotional service performed with that previous, non-Vedic karmic background, what's the point of that? That's not going to be as effective in devotional service as using the Vedic. So it's just, why would you have to want to use that? Even if you become good at it, okay, then we'll have devotees that are good at, you know, their French culture, and someone else with their German culture, and someone else with their Italian, and someone American, and someone British, and then how are they going to get on? They've hated each other for thousands of years. Why should now they like each other? You know what I'm saying? You know, the Brits, what they cook, is anybody else going to call that food? No. So then, you know, it's a problem. So it's not going to work. But if everybody follows the inherent culture that is there, you know, what is the natural culture of the soul, which is the Vedic culture, that's the only universal culture. Because that is the natural culture. That is the culture that they follow throughout the universe and throughout the cosmos. So what we follow, it's only followed in our little local area. Even you go to the next city, you know, what the middle class people do there is totally different from the middle class what they do over here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, so it's you know, like, is it okay to eat a pizza with anchovies on it with everybody else there? Right? So unless you're from that kind of background, then it's fine. But if you're not, everybody else thinks it's stinky and disgusting. Why did you even order it? Order that when you're out on your own. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that everybody has their own idea of what's perfection, because perfection means what I like. So there is no material solution. There is no culture on the planet that has anything. And there is no mental speculation of how to put it all together to make perfection. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So it's just impossible. So to even try is a waste of time. And so, therefore, we avoid the principles that, okay, Vedic culture, that's Indian, and I'm from a particular part of the world and that, and so I'm from a country, and India's a country, so therefore they're equal. Why do I have to follow Indian culture? So if you use that kind of modern, speculative, atheistic approach, then it may sound logical. But in reality, no, this is the culture given by Shastra. Shastra is universal. Krishna is universal. Since Krishna is everything, then all it is the Vedic culture says how to deal with Krishna, who is everything. And we're thinking, no, my mental speculation on what is correct is actually more important than what it is, because we're thinking it's separate from Krishna. Right? You know, we're in the West, so it's separate from Krishna. It's not acting according to the rules. It's the same rules. It's not different. Right? Is snow, snow is cold in the West, right? So is snow hot in India? You know what I'm saying? You know, there's a storm in the West, you know, what we just had, what was it, Irma or whatever it is? You know, just came and wiped out things. But in India, storms come through and everyone goes, so refreshing. Nothing happened. You know, what is these laws that are different? So the laws of nature are the same. You're dealing with these laws. And so then that's governed by Krishna, not by us and our perception. So it's a faulty position to try to take that, no, my intellectual approach, that actually defines the laws of nature. It doesn't. It never has and never will. So the only thing that defines the laws of nature are Krishna's instructions, which is the Veda. So we can say, but we're not Vedic. But the point is since when does anybody in any locale get along anyway? Remember, the French Revolution happened amongst who? French. You know, it wasn't that the Germans were there. That was called World War II or World War I. Right? That was the French Revolution. It was French Revolution. Right? And so even there, then the lower class, you know, headed by the bourgeois, got rid of the nobility. And then what did the lower class do with the bourgeois? They got rid of them also. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is you'll always have these differences. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter. Does that make sense? You know, it's just wherever you're from, the next village over, the next county over, they'll think that you're weird. They actually do. You know what I'm saying? Just like, okay, you're down in Louisiana and you make some nice gumbo, everyone will think, wow, that's great. Make that in New York, how's it going to go down? Right? Huh?
Not good.
Yeah, it won't. That's the whole point. You know, in New York, they're going to be happy with a Chicago pizza? No. And nobody will like a California pizza. You know? You understand? So the whole point is this, it doesn't have. It doesn't have that. Its own. It's so regionalized. And then we're thinking we're going to make my region, because I'm going to say, I'm from this region, I do this, so this is what I'll do. And then everybody wants to be the universal, work out for everybody. But you can't. It's impossible. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that religion that's being followed means not following the Vedic. That these other religions around the world and natures and cultures is because the air is different, the water is different, the temperature is different, environment, landscape is different, what's available is different. Does that make sense? You know, so because of that, that's what they do. So that's the whole thing, is we have to appreciate that these things, these are always going to be differences, but how to hold that together? The only thing is the universal culture, which is the Vedic culture. So therefore, any soul from anywhere can follow the Vedic culture. It's just a matter of education, so you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing, of course, anything you do is going to make a mess. Right? That's that. So, but if you know, have knowledge, then it will work very nicely. So that's why Prabhupada gives. That's why the Acharyas give. They always give the Vedic culture. They always explain the Vedic culture. I mean, so much of what's being described here is the culture the Acharyas talk about. Because that's the secondary form that you use in devotional service. So it's the best of the secondary forms. And we can speculate and make up our own that I like it like this. But in reality, is it going to be good?
You understand? Just a quick follow-up. So, when we read these descriptions of proper Vedic culture, then a devotee who is actually, say he's advanced in his attraction to Krishna, then when he interacts very nicely, say on the material plane, he's able to see how I'm able to attract, like there's an experience of rasa in this interaction because I'm following the rules set by the interactions over there.
Right.
He's able to see that relationship.
Yeah, no, you can see. Because the point is it works. Mm-hmm. See, the major problem in getting anything done is accepting that you should do it. You know, it's just like, is picking up the clothes on the floor in the teenager's room actually that difficult? Technically, how long would it take if you actually just did it without bringing your emotions into it? A couple of minutes or less, right? But because of not accepting it, it just can't be done. And even if you have to do it, you know, your mom says do it, and she comes back after 15 minutes or 20 minutes, is it done? No. So that's the whole thing. That's the hardest part. Actually, the Vedic culture is very easy to do because it's natural. We've been following the Vedic culture more than we have not. Because in all the 14 planetary systems, they all follow it. Only in this, you know, one ninth of one seventh, then we cannot follow, you know, of 1/14, then we may not follow it. This is the only place the Bharatakanda of Bharatvarsha that we see. This is the only place that if people don't want to follow it, this is where it happens. And we think we're the universe. You know, and then what we do, that's we project that by Europia onto the spiritual world. You know, if Krishna really wants to be happy, then he should do what we're doing. You know? Like that. When in reality, no. He's already got it worked out. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. If we just accept it, then it's so easy to do. But if we don't accept it, it's impossible. So you say, oh, it's so difficult. It's because we don't accept it. That's why Prabhupada opens the Gita. The first point is the spirit, the attitude. Adjust the attitude, then you can understand Gita. You don't adjust the attitude, no matter how smart you are, you'll never understand Gita. Like that. Because it's all about the attitude. Because the attitude then defines what the intent is. And bhakti means it's a principle of intent. You want to please Krishna. As long as we want to please ourselves, and we don't, in other words, I took up Krishna consciousness because I'm disturbed. So actually it's about myself. So if I want to add in Krishna consciousness, it's only to make me happy. So as long as Krishna consciousness makes me happy, it answers some questions I didn't know, or it removes some anxieties that I may have, either emotional or in the way of facilities. Then Krishna consciousness is good. Therefore, how does all these things happen? You know, how do bad things happen to good people? Like, why is this going on? You know, because I joined Krishna consciousness to remove all these material obstacles. So it wasn't, then the question is it actually about Krishna? That is connected to Krishna, that's good. But we have to understand is there's not enough piety to make it that about following the rules and regulations, because that's the higher principle. Is that I follow out of duty. Okay, I'm adding Krishna consciousness, I'm getting so much benefit. So now, because I'm getting benefit, do I should I be grateful for that? Right? If I'm getting benefit, I should be grateful. How do I express that? By following the rules and regulations. Right? So that's the next higher level. Then by following that to please Krishna, it moves quicker than I'm just doing it because it pleases me. It will act, but it'll be the slowest. Then when I follow the rules, then it will work quicker. And then, when it's actually just about Krishna, pleasing Krishna, that's the spontaneous platform. That moves the quickest. You understand? Yeah. So it's a science. It's that, but it's a very sophisticated science. So even though the principles are so simple, they're all accommodating. So that's the difficulty, is that we get caught up in the distraction of the secondary, that we can't see the principal rule that's functioning throughout. Because if you see it according to the principal rule, all the secondary things become very easy. They all fall into place. Does that make sense? So that's why for us, the principle is about being Krishna conscious. Then, secondarily, we try to do something nice. Because we look at the secondary, we have to engage that. We can't just sit down and only deal with primary. Haridas Thakur sits down, chants the holy name. He can do that all day. He doesn't have a problem. we can't. Right? So therefore, we have to engage these secondary aspects very nicely in Krishna's service. But we have to have a balance. If the secondary becomes prominent, then we've missed it. And if we make the primary prominent without applying it to secondary, that's also we've missed the point. Because you express the primary through the secondary, right? The cooking's the primary, the kitchen is the secondary. But how is cooking expressed? Through the kitchen. So we say, no, I'm just going to have cooking, we don't need the kitchen, it's just a matter of cooking, you know, why do we need all these external things, it's just cooking. Am I going to get anything to eat? No. And so that'll go on for a while, then when the sentiment runs out and people go, hey, I'm starving, then they'll just get into the kitchen. Yeah, we tried that cooking stuff, and now we just, you know, now it's all about the kitchen, you know, and then try to gnaw on the pots or something. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole difficulty, is that it's a balance between the two. It's not one or the other. It's both. But of the two, the primary is what makes the secondary of value. Right? The secondary doesn't exist without the primary. And the primary is what is being manifest by the secondary. So the secondary has no meaning if it's not... The kitchen has no meaning if you never cook. That's what we mean by it's a waste of time. Because if you follow the religious principles, but don't... You know, if I go in the kitchen, put pots on the fire, move spoons around and all that, take knives and, you know, curl my knuckles back and move it back and forth and do that, but I've not cut any vegetables, I'm not cooking any... There's nothing there. It's just the kitchen. The kitchen interact. Have I done anything? No. Now, kids, when they go out in the backyard and they cook, that's what they do. And for them, it's all happening. But where is it all happening? In their head. In reality, it's not happening. That's why after a while, when they actually get hungry, then they go in the house and eat something. So that's what we mean by it's a waste of time. Because if you don't, if you go in the kitchen and interact all the things in the kitchen and don't cook, it's a waste of time. So that's what we mean. You follow all the activities you do, you know, but it's not connected to Krishna. It's a waste of time. So even Varnashram is a waste of time that's not connected to Krishna. So Prabhupada says you have to use Varnashram, but he also points out that it's not using Varnashram that makes it devotional service. So then from that, then we'll go, oh, see, Prabhupada rejects Varnashram. We don't need to use it. No, we don't need to use Varnashram and not be about Krishna. Because then some devotees get into Varnashram, then it's all about the rules and all that. Oh, this is not devotion and that's not devotion. But since when does devotion depend upon Varnashram? You know what I'm saying? You know, you're not dressed in this way, so you can't be a devotee. Where does it say that? Is that for the devotee, then since this is what is recommended and this is what Krishna does, why you wouldn't want to do it? Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's the whole point, is that you have to know the balance. That takes the maturity. But because of our own attachments, our own conditioning, then we'll see one side or the other, generally never with a balance. So you have to see the two together, otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Is that okay? Yeah. Good. Say we're on Dear Father and Mother?
Yes.
Dear Father and Mother, please forgive us for not serving you. We are not independent and have been greatly frustrated by cruel Kamsa. Footnote 2. The BBT purport states, according to Sanskrit grammar, the words paratantrayoho and klishtayoho may also refer to Vasudeva and Devaki. Actually, Vasudeva and Devaki were under the control of Providence and were disturbed by the activities of Kamsa. Whereas Sri Krishna is always the absolute personality of Godhead. Right? So he's not, but in the rasa means because that's going on and he's there. Therefore in rasa you can't interact in that way. Right? So he can only do by coming, killing Kamsa and doing all that. So now that that's been done, so there's there. So the Brajavasi is there interacting, then that pastime is brought to its pinnacle of perfection. Then, you know, because we're dealing with time here in the material world, time and space is always a major thing. In Goloka, they all go, all the pastimes go in at once. He doesn't have to leave Vrindavan to go to Mathura, because Vrindavan, the pastimes are going on, Mathura, they're going on, Dwarka, they're going on, it's all going on. But here, then, we have this linear aspect of time and space. So then, Krishna then does all these aspects in the pastimes, and that's what makes it relatable for us. We see the transformation, we see the progression. Right? So then Krishna is saying, because this is the time for the Vrindavan, and Kamsa is doing his thing, so that's there, so he can't get involved. But not that he couldn't, it's just that it's the wrong time as far as the relationship goes. So now at this point, then it goes. It's he's come, and so now it can go on nicely. Not that he's controlled by it, but playing human pastimes, he will present as if he is. Right? Because that's where the taste is. No? Okay. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus beguiled by the words of Lord Hari, the supreme soul of the universe, who by his internal illusory potency appeared to be a human, his parents joyfully raised him up on their laps and embraced him." Remember, before he came and offered obeisances, they wouldn't come forward. They just stood there with, you know, folded hands, because here's God, you know. But now, by extending his internal illusory energy, now then they come forward, they pick him up, put him on the laps, do everything as if he's, you know, their child again. Pouring out a shower of tears upon the Lord, his parents, who were bound by the rope of affection, could not speak. They were overwhelmed, O King, and their throats choked up with tears. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "The word cha indicates all the items mentioned. They were permeated internally and externally with prema, which was like a rope weapon, inescapable and long." Right? So they're just totally tied up with this prema. So they could not understand anything, vimohitao. Tears were in their throats, so they could not speak a word. All they did was stand there, showered with tears like an abhishek. O King, this condition of being filled with prema can be understood by you. All this behavior should not be seen by Nanda, since Krishna treated both Vasudeva and Nanda as his father, but not in each other's presence. Right? So in the modern sense, okay, in the modern context, you know, we want to use the, Woody Allen, you know, principle of, you know, social relationships and interaction, then should Krishna deal with Vasudeva and Nanda all together? Yes, they would all be together interacting, and Mother Yashoda be shucking and jiving with Devaki, and it's all happening like this and that, and yes, but how well did it work out for him personally? Not so good. So we can understand there's a vast difference between how he can behave and how he thinks things should be. And then there's reality. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the whole point we see here, is that he's dealing in this way, but it's done in such a way that Nanda Baba won't see this. Because Nanda Baba is his father. As Braja Krishna, he's his father. As Vasudeva Krishna, then Vasudeva and Devaki are his parents. So the different moods are there. How you deal is differently. You know? And then how they interact with each other, that's another thing. But still, you don't show these things. Right? In the modern thing, no, but you know, in truthfulness and openness and all that, and since when has truthfulness and openness ever worked really good for anybody? Right? It doesn't actually work very good. Does that make sense? It doesn't. So that's the whole point, is that everything you do is that according to Rasa. You say, oh, but this is artificial. So what's not artificial? Right? The animal in the wild, that's not artificial. They see it, they eat it. You know? That's it. They don't like you, they attack you. You know, or they run away. That's natural. So all this thing that we say is human society, that's all in that, according to that Padati, it's all artificial. So all the people saying this is all artificial, they're totally artificial, because where are they saying that? Right? Where is the bohemian in his cafe, drinking his coffee with his friends and talking about how we have to be natural and all that? Yeah, it's in the city. Why isn't he out in the forest walking around naked, right? You know, eating some dandelions or something, you know? Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is they sit in the cities and make all these comments, because country people don't make these comments. That's the reality. They don't make these comments. City people make these comments. Because it doesn't work, so they come up with a philosophy how to try to make it work. But it doesn't work still. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Has Paris ever been a small place? Right? It's always been known as a big city. Right? So all the philosophers that come out of there, that come up with all these philosophies, they've always been city people. Right? Sitting in a cafe. Right? That's the way it goes. Right? Diogenes, now he's a country man. Who follows him? Right? Do I hear zero? Right? Nobody follows him. Huh?
Alexander said he would like to follow him.
Yeah, he would like to follow him, but he's not. Because he's Alexander, right? So, you know, next best is Diogenes, right? Because he appreciated his independence. But the common people wouldn't.
Maybe we should also relocate.
Relocate. You should all too. Okay. I say, I'll get ourselves some barrels and stuff like that.
No, I'm in Paris.
Hmm? Oh, Paris. Okay, yeah, yeah. That's there, yeah. Yeah, I had one devotee say, you know, he appreciated culture and that. When he visited Paris, he says, wow, if I had known that this is what, I never would have lived anywhere else. Or, you know, so. Yeah. Yes, so he's careful about this, because the point is it's about rasa. You know, we're looking at it, no truth and openness, but why do we want truth and openness? What? We want to know what everybody else is doing so we know whether it'll affect us or not, because we're worried about our security. That's why we want truth and openness. And with ourselves, generally we're not truthful and open, but even if we are, we expect everybody else to buy it. Right? No questions asked. I'm open and truthful. Everybody else should just go, oh, okay. But everybody else being open and truthful, then I can digest it the way I like. I get upset with this one and that one, and I, you know, you understand? So that's all it's for. It's not for some higher purpose. It's simply a political position. We have to remember that the compound of the phrase is political correctness. It means it's correct politically. So it's politics. So that means it's economics. That's all. It's only gain and safety on the political and economic platform. That's all it's for. So how is that spiritual? How is that human? Because human starts with Dharma. Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, then Krishna is very careful to see that all these things are balanced. Like when he deals with the gopis, it's not in front of anybody else. Does that make sense? When he deals with the cowherd boys in that fold, there's no one else there. Right? The cowherd boys wrestling and doing all the things, would Mother Jashoda be happy? Not necessarily. Right? She might think, oh, it's so rough. Because in the morning, they come and she sees that he has marks on his body and this and that, bruises and scratches and that, and they say, oh, these cowherd boys are too rough. You know, she'll have to, you know, tell them to, you know, deal more nicely with Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Verses 12 to 19. Krishna installed Ugrasena as king of the Yadus. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus having comforted his mother and father, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as the son of Devaki, installed his maternal grandfather, Ugrasena, as king of the Yadus. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, it appears that in those days in the western part of India, there were many small kingdoms ruled by the Yadu dynasty, Andaka dynasty, Vrishni dynasty, Bhoja dynasty. Maharaj Ugrasena belonged to the Bhoja dynasty. Therefore, Krishna indirectly declared that the king of the Bhoja dynasty should be the emperor of the other small kingdoms. Krishna willingly asked Maharaj Ugrasena to rule over himself and Balaram because they were his subjects. The word praja is used both for progeny and for citizens. So Krishna belonged to the Praja, both as a grandson of Maharaj Ugrasena and as a member of the Yadu dynasty. Thus he voluntarily accepted the rule of Maharaj Ugrasena. Because here you have, basically, the Yadu dynasty means the moon dynasty. Right, so those within the moon dynasty, then there'll be so many dynasties, and then who's the head of that? That'll be then the emperor of the Yadu dynasty. The Lord told him, "O mighty king, we are your subjects. So please command us. Indeed, because of the curse of Yayati, no Yadu may sit on the royal throne." Footnote 3. The BBT purport mentions, Ugrasena might have told the Lord, "My dear Lord, it's actually you who should sit on the throne." Anticipating the statement, Lord Krishna told Ugrasena that because of Yayati's ancient curse, princes in the Yadu dynasty could not technically sit on the royal throne, and therefore Krishna and Balaram were disqualified. Of course, Ugrasena also could be considered part of the Yadu dynasty, but by the order of the Lord, he could sit on the royal throne. In conclusion, these are all pastimes of the Supreme Lord, enjoyed as he played the part of a human being. Because right, he could also say, well, we're all Yadus. But amongst the Yadus, they're there. But they will never be the emperor of the world. That's why, otherwise, why didn't Dwarka, why wasn't it the center? Why wasn't Ugrasena the emperor? Because they're from the moon dynasty. So the Kurus, their sun dynasty. Right? So that's why Krishna and Arjuna, because Arjuna's sun dynasty, Krishna's moon dynasty. So in there, even though they're equals in joking, then Arjuna would always refer to him as Yadu, meaning you're in the junior position, actually, like that, because they're the Kurus, and so like that for fun they would enter.
Like in the pastime of Lord Ramachandra, he at one point says, "Oh, being a king, so many problems. Next time I would not be a king."
Yeah. So then, next time is Krishna, he's not the king. And then the next time again, he's really not a king. Since I am present in your entourage as your personal attendant, all the demigods and other exalted personalities will come with heads bowed to offer you tribute. What then to speak of the rulers of men? Right, so the demigods will come and offer respect to Ugrasena because that is Krishna's kingdom, but he's ruling. So because Krishna is subservient, they're all subservient to Krishna, so naturally everybody will be subservient. So in that way, actually Ugrasena is the superior king. Right? The Lord then brought all his close family members and other relatives back from the various places to which they had fled in fear of Kamsa. He received the Yadus, Rishnis, Andakas, Madhus, Dasharhas, Kukuras, and other clans with due honor. And he also consoled them, for they were weary of living in foreign lands. Right? So this also is, in other words, the clans. Right? So it's just all the different clans of the Yadu dynasty. So in this case, the head of the Bhojas, even though it's one clan, they become the emperors of all the others. Footnote 4. There are 8 chief groups of Yadus. Yadus, Vrishnis, Andakas, Madhus, Dasharhas, Kukuras, Satvatas, and Bhojas. Right, so that's all the different groups. And so all together, that's the Yadus. Right? Even though there's a group called the Yadus. That's the thing. In the Vedic sense, you can have a subgroup that has the same name as the main group, which, you know, yeah. So, okay, so enter.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.